never rests.
A beauty colors in the sky. What a thrilling time to be alive.
It's your boys out here, and welcome to the Georgia Show on your Thursday. Excited to have you in here with us and appreciate you tuning in. Big week on tap. Jake Rowe, we talked about that on Sunday. And listen, I'm hoping if you're not aware, if you haven't been over to Dogs HQ, we have a big thread. Apparently, the Rizzler will be in town. And if you don't know what that is, that's okay.
Listen, it's got some people on tilt, brother. And I just cannot understand why. I cannot understand why. But it has got
to say, look, those Costco guys, they're kind of the Costco guys are kind of weird. The Rizzler is kind of dope.
They're weird and they're cheesy, but it's incredibly harmless. It's the most harmless thing I've ever seen in my life.
But I do like the Rizzler. I got a soft spot for the Rizzler.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a cute little kid. Whatever. You're telling me as a kid I'd get to come to Athens and have somebody show me around and have a good time? Oh, the horrors.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
He locked his parents up and throw away the key.
Like I said, if you don't know what we're talking about, you can Google it. If you choose not to, I would understand that also.
This show's already off the rails.
Guys, big week on tap here for the Georgia Bulldogs, and the anticipation continues to build with the Alabama Crimson Tide headed into town for a major matchup under the lights of Sanford Stadium. The people keep discussing the blackout, Jake. I don't think that Kirby Smart and company are going to buy into that necessarily, but I do hope the fans do. But before we dive in on this game any further, I do think it's important that we kind of preview the injury situation in this one. And I know you had some notes up over at Dogs HQ yesterday about how things stand in terms of health for some of the key names. Let's touch on that real quick and what it can mean for the Georgia Bulldogs this weekend.
Well, I mean, we don't have to worry about my notes. We've got an official report from the Southeastern Conference here. It's tough to read this. The SEC is really sucking it up here. We're not helping us much at all. But there's Alabama and Georgia's kind of injury report right there. Alabama, Tim Keenan's probable, and Jam Miller is not on it at all, which is good news for Alabama. I don't know how effective, how limited those guys are going to be. It's impossible to know. You know, I suspect Tim Keenan's going to have a hard time being more than a 12, maybe 15 snap guy and probably not going to be full speed. Jam Miller's probably in better shape there. But again, you know, running back that hasn't really been contacted or really hit in a while, you know, that's something you're going to have to consider. The Ja Marion Latham injury right there is one that Charlie Potter mentioned to us today. Also, shame on Georgia fans for being such jerks to Charlie whenever he kind of answered some questions for me. I acted like he just, disrespected Georgia somehow, and he didn't. The injury report there for Alabama, I mean, you know, kind of what you expected. I was surprised by the Georgia report, which, you know, Ethan Barber, Thomas Blackshear, all of that stuff is kind of stuff you expect. Ernest Green, doubtful, expected that one. No Juan Gaston at all. And I would have expected him to be a little bit limited this week.
Yeah, I don't even know, Jake. I mean, what do you read into these things, man? I mean, there's still gamesmanship to all of this. I mean, I look at a doubtful and I say, okay, I don't expect to see that guy. But does – I don't know. I mean, if you were making this thing based on everything you've heard, I feel like Juan Gaston would just be a probable, right? I mean, like that would be a seemingly a fair designation. I don't know. I mean, I don't – I can't say how much stock I really put into these self-reported injuries.
I was about to tell you to stop screaming at me, but I had my volume turned up too loud. It wasn't your fault. I really thought you were yelling at me there for a second. This is just not worth playing with fire. You know, like, I mean, it's, you know, this is just not worth getting into the weeds with the SEC.
What's the difference?
I mean, apparently he's not probable, Jake. Apparently he's in. He's all in, you know. I mean, that's the only thing I read from it. I feel like Kirby's been pretty honest with these. The one tactic I have seen, and Lane Kiffin has been the most. Let's look at Lane. Let's see what he's been doing. That's always a good entertaining thing to do, is to see what Lane's up to. This is kind of a short one for him, but, you know, Lane Kiffin has tended to kind of put out some long ones.
He's loaded it.
Yeah, like Bill Belichick used to do, putting Tom Brady on the injury report every week, you know. You know, he's had some really, really long ones to put out, and then kind of trimmed them down as the week went on. And, you know, maybe it kind of mirrors, you know, practice for them. Like, hey, this so-and-so is going to miss reps today. We're going to put them on the injury report because they're missing reps. I don't really know. But, listen, I mean, Georgia's have been pretty spot on. You know, I mean, I can't really think of one where somebody, you know, unless there was kind of a late week setback. It happened with Trevor Etienne one time last year where he was probable, I think it was on Wednesday, and then he was out on Thursday. That was when he popped ribs in practice. You know, I mean, he actually, right, you know, felt the crack, not the drug. And you know, that was that's kind of where it went for him. But I take this for what it is. I'm surprised Chase Linton is not on there.
Right.
Because he had been. But, you know, he had a surgery preseason. I don't know the details of it or anything like that, but we were told at the time that he wasn't going to be out, you know, for most or even half the season. So I guess that's coming back. Malachi Tolliver actually made the trip to Tennessee and he's on there, but we probably don't need to get in the weeds of talking about Ethan Barber, Malachi Tolliver, Thomas Blackshear at this point, because they're just out. And, you know, they were all out last week, last time they played, except for Tolliver, who appears to be the third string center now after that high ankle sprain set him back and allowed Cortez Smith to move ahead of him. But Ernest Green being doubtful, not shocking. I would have expected to see Juan Gaston on there. You know, even Dwight Phillips, who has been, from what I understand, unlimited in practice this week in terms of reps. So that's all good news for Georgia. I mean, Ernest Green's your most experienced offensive lineman. Some people out there have it through their head that the man can't stay healthy, that he's never been able to stay healthy. He started 23 straight games. I don't know what to tell you. That's pretty solid. 23 straight games at offensive tackle in the SEC.
Yeah. My concern would be this. My question to you would be this. Now that we're this will be game four, mm-hmm. including, and then there's been a bye week amongst that, right? So we're 5 weeks in. Do you get concerned when you see that this guy continue to end up on this injury report over the long term of this season specifically?
No, not really. I mean, just shut him down until he gets healthy. You know, because clearly he's unhealthy in a way that he can't be effective, you know, and you know, that's one of the reasons this is one of the reasons why, and I get a lot of people talking about, you know, I get a lot of people kind of getting after me a little bit on the forum sometimes about kind of riding the fence and trying to appease the people who are negative about the offense. Tate Ratledge, you know, is starting in the NFL and looks great right now. And, oh, man, why couldn't he play like this last year? Well, he couldn't play like this last year because he missed daggum six games. He had a high ankle sprain and a sprained MCL. He had tightrope surgery. He had at least 7, 8, 9 games last year where he wasn't close to himself, right? So that's a big part of it. You know, I mean, I had an illness at Ole Miss. But with that said, I saw portions of the Tennessee game, and I saw portions of how Georgia's offensive line with Dylan Fairchild also dealing with a, you know, torn calf muscle, where they played well enough to move the ball and do some good things. Well, if you can do that for stretches of a game, then you should be doing it more consistently. So, yes, Stacey Searles failed last season. He failed to kind of get them to play at their best level and to play consistently at that level. I have no problem admitting that, but it is also worth admitting, if we're just all going to be honest about this, agenda free here, Georgia had a lot of injuries, and that's going to screw with your continuity. There's challenges. Could they have done a better job? Absolutely. But at the same time, hey, it wasn't easy. There were some real big, you know. So I mean, we can talk about it round and round, but might as well put all the cards out on the table and flip them all up so you can kind of put the suits together and everything else, and you know, figure it all out, because otherwise, what are we doing here? If we're just going to ignore the things we don't want to see, then we can't have an honest discussion about it, and we should just admit that and move on.
I was wondering how long you were going to keep going with your cards analogy there. You were really going after that one. Now, given, though, that we don't see Juan Gaston on this report, and to me, that's certainly the most interesting name, because I feel like, Jake, with Ernest Green out at the tackle position, that probably opens up the possibility and maybe even a somewhat of a likelihood that that's where we'll see Juan Gaston this weekend, I would think, because Dontrell Glover has played very well at that right guard position. So between Bo Hewley and Juan Gaston, I would think that that's maybe how your tackle rotation looks on Friday or on Saturday, excuse me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, I know Juan has gotten some looks at tackle. You know, he's battling. You know, he's kind of coming back from a couple. You know, he's got both ankle injuries. So I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I feel confident that he's gotten some tackle reps this week.
We both believe that's probably where his long-term future is.
Yeah, probably. You know, okay. Probably, because those guys are hard to find. And right. I do think Juan can be a really good tackle. But I would expect Bo Hewley to be Georgia's right tackle. And as long as he plays well and holds his own, I don't think he's going to really give way to anybody else. You know, I do think – not that I think he's just head and shoulders above anybody, but I don't know that – I don't know that Juan Gaston has, because of injuries, because of missing reps in previous weeks, that they've had a chance to really get him moving in that direction just yet. You know, I mean, it wouldn't shock me, honestly. And God, Georgia fans are gonna lose their minds when I say this. If Michael Looney was the next man up at right tackle, I know he played really bad against Tennessee, guys. I get it. I get that. But playing on the road, a lot more difficult than playing at home. You know, if you're recruiting the right players and you believe that Kirby's recruiting, you know, the guys that can handle it, then what happened to him in Tennessee will make him a better player. It doesn't mean he's going to be incapable for the rest of his life. It just means that he played a bad game, and he's probably going to get better. And if he doesn't, then okay, he's not there, and he's a guard for the rest of his, you know, for the rest of his Georgia career for the most part, or until he can try to show something different at right tackle. But you know, I would expect Bo Hewley to be the guy as of right now.
Yeah, fair enough. I can see that. If that's the case, though, let's say it is Bo and Michael Looney at the tackle spot. Do you think that we see Juan as the starter at right guard, or do you think that that's Dontrell Glover?
No, I think that's Dontrell Glover for sure. I would be surprised if Dontrell Glover is not the starter at right guard.
Big, big, big development there. Guys, look. Got a new partner we want to welcome in, and that's our friends at Brunt Workwear. Look, if you're looking for – I was going to do the exact same thing. If you're looking for a high-quality product here –
They only sent me one. I'm just joking. They sent me two boots.
If you're looking for a high-quality piece of workwear, all right, you want to get you some boots, these things are waterproof. And I will tell you this, Jake Rowe, I got them out of the box. I tried them on. They're super comfortable. They really right out of the rip. So – I was impressed with that. Boots can tend to be a little bit stiff. These, not so much on the breaking in. Brunt was tired of workwear brands out there cutting corners. You work too hard to be stuck in uncomfortable boots that don't hold up. So they built something better. Boots that are insanely comfortable and built for any job site. And for a limited time, our listeners get $10 off at Brunt when you use code DOGSHQ. I want to make sure I'm telling you the correct code.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And there will be a link, whether you listen to this thing on the podcast, whether you do the podcast, whether you watch it on YouTube, whatever, there will be a link in the show description where you can visit the website via there and just kind of have all of that covered, you know, on the front end.
So code DOGSHQ, $10 off at Brunt. Just head over to bruntworkwear.com, use the code, you're good to go. And after you order, they'll ask you where you heard about Brunt. Do us a favor. Tell them it was from this show. But when you choose work boots, you don't have to sacrifice comfort or durability. You can get a really, really nice pair. I got to tell you, Jack, look, I'm not exactly on a lot of job sites myself, but these are pretty fashionable.
I'm going to start wearing these bad boys with shorts.
That's what I'm saying. These are good looking, brother.
Yeah, they are. They're nice. I really like them. They're waterproof.
Yes. That's the big thing for me. Yeah. I was looking at a nice pair of waterproof boots. I'm with it. So get over to bruntworkwear.com and use code DOGSHQ for $10 off your first purchase today. Speaking of code DOGSHQ, you can use that if you put 20 on the end for our friends at sunheist.com. Great sunglasses, great friends of the show, local Georgia business. They do a lot of things really well over there at sunheist.com. A number of different styles and a number of different ways you can customize them. So get over there, check them out today. Free standard shipping on orders of $65 or more. Free returns. You can also, the thing that we've talked about a lot on the show, they throw in a lot of cool stuff. So you get the free accessory bundle with it, the microfiber towel. You got the little sunglasses necklace to go with it, a case for them. So get some stickers in there. Really, really nice product. And I know that both you and I wear our Sunheist very, very often.
Every single day. Every single day, and I love them, no doubt.
All right. Developing thoughts. We had our early thoughts on Sunday while we did the Georgia show and had a chance to talk about what we were thinking with the page just turning. Now we are looking at it in terms of deeper in the week, a chance to – you've spoken with Charlie Potter, like you said. You've had a chance to kind of look at this team and compare. And I guess where are you at now with this game when it comes to Georgia's matchup on Saturday?
Honestly, I feel even less – I don't want to say confident. I just feel – the more I think about it, the more I just realize, like, man – we're still so early in the season that there's so many different ways this could go.
Sure.
I remember when Alabama beat Georgia on this weekend last year, and Georgia fans were thinking, especially in the first half of that game, this season is over. And Alabama was going to be ranked number one coming out of that game. Well, they were ranked number one, I'm pretty sure. Then they lost to Vanderbilt plus two more games, all on the road, by the way. And Georgia ended up going to the playoff and winning the SEC championship. So I'm not saying that to hedge. Listen, I think Georgia's going to win this game. I think Georgia should win this game. I think Georgia needs to win this game, right? Like not just from a perception standpoint. I usually downplay that, but I mean, God, man, you can't let Alabama come in here and just end another streak on you. And kind of be the team that does that again. Like, that's brutal. That's going to be a tough pill to swallow for any and all Georgia fans. But we just don't – there's still so much season left. I mean, we're just getting to the, you know, one-third of the way through the regular season when Georgia plays this game. And, you know, 67% of the schedule left. I just don't think we know a ton about either team. Like, Alabama went out there and kind of laid an egg against Florida State. And since then, the effort's been better. They've handled business and blown out two teams they should have blown out. You know, Georgia went out there in week two and kind of laid an egg against Austin Peay, comes back, plays a very difficult road game. Anytime you play at Neyland Stadium against a good team and what appears to be a very good offense based on what it has done thus far this year, Georgia's got a good win. Georgia's got a better win than Alabama. But, you know, and I think Georgia's favored for a reason because Georgia's at home. Alabama struggled on the road. There's all of that stuff. But I don't expect either one of these teams to peak right now, to be playing their best ball right now. If they do, they're in trouble. So I just think it's going to come down to – we can talk about all of the different things, and we will, but – we can't predict who's going to go out there and miss a block on third and short. We can't predict who's going to put the ball on the ground or who's going to tip a pass and catch an interception. Who's going to throw the ball to the other team with a bad decision. There's just stuff there's no way of knowing. And that stuff plays into who wins and loses these ball games. And I think Georgia will be ready. And I think Alabama is going to have the challenge of dealing with a very rare crowd at Sanford Stadium, one that you just don't see very often. And for that reason, I like Georgia to win this game. But as the week has gone on, I've just thought more and more about neither of these teams are anything close to a finished product. I mean, they could get worse. They could get better. I would expect both of them to get better. And that's kind of how I look at it.
From a talent perspective, how do you feel that these two teams compare? We're going to talk about some specific matchups, but just, you know, as a roster, all right, let's take 100 guys, right? Or 85 if you want to, whatever. 1 through 85, I had, and I ask you this because I had somebody that I spoke with, and they said, and now this is not some sort of insider, this was a friend of mine, and he said, I feel like if you took the helmets off of, or took the logos off the helmets, he said, I kind of feel like I know who has the talent edge. Do you feel the same way?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I would say Georgia front to back is a little bit more talented, but I think it's a pretty small margin.
I agree with you.
No, I do think it's a pretty small margin. I would have a hard time, and this is being objective as I possibly can, but probably not the most objective person in the world. I went to the University of Georgia. I cover the University of Georgia. Been around this program for, you know, for a long time now. But I don't know how you can say Alabama's more talented than Georgia right now. You know, and if you wanted to say the same thing about Alabama, I could agree. You know, like I could agree that I can't. If I was on the show right now with Tim Watts or Charlie Potter or somebody like that, and they're like, well, I don't know how you can say Georgia's more talented. Okay, you know, yeah. I can understand where you're coming from on that. I disagree with you, but it's not like, you know, I don't want to fight you over it because I think I'm that right. It's simply I look at Georgia and I just think, you know, some of Alabama's frontline talent I think is a little better than Georgia's frontline talent, but I think some of Georgia's kind of supporting talent is significantly better than Alabama's talent. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it. You know, I think their secondary has been largely untested in the pass game. That doesn't mean they're not good, but they've just been untested. You know, I think that, you know, on the offensive line, they're very big, but they haven't been very physical, you know, and with both Wisconsin and Florida State shut their run game down, like completely. So, you know, are you going to come in and win a big road game in a quarterback's first ever SEC game without the ability to run the football? I have a hard time seeing that. But at the same time, if you'd have told me that Georgia would have shut down Tennessee's run game and Joey Aguilar could throw and keep Tennessee in that ball game, I would have probably disagreed with that too. The one thing I will point to, though, and we'll kind of move to the matchups here, I look at stylistically, I've said this a few times now, but stylistically, I look at Alabama's receiving corps, and it reminds me a lot of Texas. They've got separators. They've got fast, twitchy guys, route runners, but they don't have the big physical types. I mean, Isaiah Horton is a big physical receiver, big physical possession receiver, but he's number three for them, right? They don't have that mix of speed and size that Tennessee had with Mike Matthews and with Braylon Stanley and you know, Chris Brazel. Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different group. I would take Alabama's receiving group. Like if you gave me a draft and I got to pick one to be mine, I would pick Alabama's receiving group. But I do think Tennessee's on paper matches up worse with Georgia's is a worse matchup for Georgia than Alabama is. Now, you look back at last year, somebody was like, well, Ryan Williams torched Georgia last year. He did. Like he had two really big plays. One of them was a ball that Malachi Starks tipped up in the air and Ryan Williams caught. And the other one was a arm punt that, you know, Ryan Williams adjusted to in the air and Georgia did it. It's not like he ran by Georgia's defense and torched him and put him in blenders or anything like that. It's not that Georgia didn't defend him, you know, theoretically fairly okay. There were a couple balls that just kind of went Alabama's way in that game. Not luck, but just that's the way things work out sometimes in football. So I'm interested to see when you talk about those matchups, can Georgia play sound football in the back end and not bust coverages? And can it be physical with Alabama's receivers effectively? Because Florida State did that and it gave Alabama some trouble at receiver. And I wonder if Georgia can do that same thing, and that's a big matchup for me.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I wonder to what degree, Jake, I don't know, maybe you could answer it because I'm kind of torn on it, but I wonder to what degree having faced Ryan Williams last year affords Georgia not an edge, but at least a better understanding of how to deal with him than they had last year. Because last year, like you said, I mean, he was able to do some things against them that were super impressive. And I wonder if just having that experience under your belt of dealing with him allows you a deeper insight. I think almost inevitably that would be the case, but I just don't know, does that provide you an edge there?
Yeah, I don't know, because Jeremy Bernard's playing a higher caliber of football than he was playing this time last year too. You know, second year at Alabama, he's familiar with Kalen DeBoer and the offense, but, you know, they're using him really effectively too. So, you know, I mean, you say the same thing about Ryan Williams and what Georgia's going to do defensively, you know. So, you know, he's a year older, theoretically a year better. But, I mean, I certainly don't think from Georgia's side that it hurts that they're, you know, more familiar. I thought they did a really good job kind of covering him up last year. You know, I mean, Julian Humphrey is in phase on that ball that the game winner. Malachi Starks, for a safety on a guy like Ryan Williams, had pretty strong coverage on him. The plays just kind of broke Alabama's way in that game, and Georgia had some that broke their way too. I mean, both Arian Smith and Dylan Bell, with all of their drop issues last year, had 100 yards against Alabama. You know, it's a tough matchup to really, you know, stick a fork in and get it to sit still for you. But I think the ultimate thing is I do believe Georgia will try and be physical with those receivers, like they were very physical with Texas's receivers last year. And the hope is that takes a cumulative, you know, toll, and you're able to get to the quarterback and make Ty Simpson hold the football a little bit more, as opposed to, you know, him being able to get the ball out quick and negate a pass rush. Because that has been something that Georgia has, you know, everybody talks about the big plays against Tennessee. I would contend that Tennessee's ability to get the ball to that first read and not give the pass rush any time, because I went back and watched that game this past week, Jake. There was a play where Nnamdi Ogboko swim moved to center and was in the quarterback's lap immediately. You look at the touchdown to Braylon Stanley, and Georgia was a tick late getting there. You know, Georgia got pressure in that game. It got free runners. It won pass rush battles. But Tennessee was just able to find the guy they wanted to get the football to so quickly. Can Georgia do a better job of taking some of that stuff away, again, by being physical with the receivers?
Let me ask you, who in your mind has the tougher task on Saturday, Georgia's offensive line or Alabama's offensive line?
Man, that is a good question. That is a really good question. I would say Alabama's offensive line, because Alabama's offensive line's got to contend with that environment. And, you know, for all of the, you know, this's and that's, the Alabama, one of the things that they've struggled with mightily on the road with their road record is running the football and penalties. You know, can they come to Athens and play clean football with that much noise and with the crowd being what it's going to be? Because of that, you know, if I were to say these two teams are even, or let's say Alabama's got a slight edge on a neutral field in that, you know, kind of matchup there. And I know the O-lines don't match up against one another, but in the comparison, then you throw them inside Sanford Stadium, I think Alabama's offensive line's got a little bit of a tougher situation to work with. And I would say the same thing if Georgia had to go play in Tuscaloosa, which they're going to have to do for the second time.
I know you're thrilled to get into that. Yeah, to me, I mean, obviously I mentioned that, you know, the secondary was a huge concern, but what happens in the trenches is going to be massive, and especially that right side of the line. I know everybody's going to be watching that kind of consistently. Dontrell Glover, for as well as he's played, and I think we both agree that he's played quite well to this point, this is a big, you know, Bill Shanks and I were talking about this. There's certainly a comfortability that comes with playing at home, but there's also a different pressure, I think. You want to do well in front of your people. You know, there's some nerves that come
certainly
with that.
It feels that way for Gunnar Stockton.
You right.
Know, small sample size. He's kind of let it all hang out when he's been away from Sanford Stadium, and it's played a lot tighter when he's in Sanford Stadium.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'll be interested to see how that one plays itself out, for sure. Guys, look, get over and check out our new friends also over at Dollar Shave Club. When you rep your team, don't stop the jersey. Dollar Shave Club's collegiate razor handles combine grooming with glory, letting students, grads, and fans show their school spirit and style. From the sink to the stadium, shave with school pride. Visit dollarshaveclub.com to grab your college handle today and say go Dogs. So you got a chance to rep it while you're out here getting groomed up for Saturday. So get over to dollarshaveclub.com and get your Georgia handle today
over there. Well, I was trying to get the graphic to pull up there and it will not pull up.
I think the graphic was a PNG file and it's blending into our back black background.
I just want to tell people real fast, look better than us. Hook up
with not that it's hard, yeah. But basic grooming will allow that.
I did do a little shaving up under here and then shaped the beard up today. But yeah, get up Dollar Shave Club. Listen, I've used Dollar Shave Club stuff in the past. I've used their body wash. I've used all sorts of stuff from them. They do high quality stuff, man. They're really awesome. They sent me a razor years back, and I got to say, I never got a chance to use it other than to kind of shape some things up. And it was world class. But yeah, go check out Dollar Shave Club. They're pretty amazing. And we certainly appreciate them.
Yeah. Speaking of amazing and things that we appreciate, GameTime.co, you can get over, use code ON3, O-N-3, and that'll get you $20 off your first purchase at GameTime.co. Look, this is the place to go for tickets. This is the place to go for experiences. They've got you covered. Jake, what's the get-in price this weekend?
Oh, boy.
it's not cheap. I can tell you that. You're in the 400 for $390.
It looks like you're certainly over $390. That's for sure. I mean, right here, you got 600 levels are $391 each. You know, thank goodness if you haven't used your promo code with Dogs from Dogs HQ and from On3, you got a chance to save a few dollars there. But also, it looks like there's a lot of tickets in here, but for a typical game, not as many as there normally are. So
no, certainly it's not
sparse, and that should tell you a little bit about what folks are expecting, or what kind of game you can expect, what kind of crowd you can expect on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Game Time provides you the opportunity to see your seat, the view from your seat before you purchase it too. So you get to know how it's going to look, man, under the lights of Sanford Stadium. Going to be a super exciting game. And if you're looking for tickets and you want them to be legit and verified and you don't want to have to haggle with that guy on the bridge and make him walk over and check in with your tickets with you, because I know we've all been there before, get with GameTime.co. They transfer them to you super fast. And like I said, code ON3, O-N-3, gets you $20 off your first purchase. Terms and conditions.
I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but back in the day when Georgia played Oklahoma State in the season opener, I believe it was at home.
Yeah, Justin Blackman.
Two games before, was Justin Blackman there at the time?
Was it him or Dez?
I honestly can't remember.
Whatever,
it was a couple, two or three games before. I'm a man. I'm 40. Rest in peace, Mike Gundy at his time at Oklahoma State.
It was also the day that App State beat Michigan.
Was it? Yeah,
that, it was. Sure. I remember that very vividly.
But so that game, I'm going into the game. My dad's there. I've got a student ticket. It's when you used to get the student tickets and the perforated, stuff. And I have my ticket in my pocket, and I get to the gate, and I look, and my ticket's not in my pocket, and I can't find it anywhere. And I start to walk out, and this guy's selling one ticket. And I'm like, how much? And he goes, $40. And I'm like, okay. I pull out $40 out of my wallet, and I pay it for him, and I look at the ticket. It's my ticket. I dropped my ticket on the ground. Old boy picked it up and sold it back to me, brother. tell me if that's not a Jake Rose story.
That is incredible, dude. That is amazing.
That is the kind of stuff your boy gets into.
My man had to buy his own ticket.
Bought my own ticket back for $40. By the time, I think student tickets at the time were like $12.
Oh, yeah. I will say this, man. I feel for the students who watch the show, you have my sympathy, because that is, I think it sucks what they do now to students. I think it was great. We got full seasons, man, for nothing. And I understand it's a different era of football and more people want to get in, and there's a lot of money floating around, but I think it sucks. I really
did. And you went over to that Stegman Coliseum ticket window.
Oh, yeah.
You picked every game up and kept picking them up in the sheet, like that movie Fever Pitch. It was the only, really the only.
See, I didn't get the sheet. I got a little booklet.
Yeah, we got the sheet. You got the sheet thing in an envelope, and you just pulled it out and smelled them. You know, they you could smell the.
My freshman year, I showed up to that thing. It was the last day to pick up tickets, and I mean, when I tell you that I damn near had to crawl to get to that window, I was hurting that morning, brother. and I got up there, and a guy slapped me, and I got some. He gave me some great tickets just because
banged up.
Whatever. But listen, there's a lot of people that are coming to Athens this weekend that are not going to have to buy tickets. And that's the top recruits in the nation.
They're not going to have to buy anything, probably.
That's true. That's true.
They're not going to have to buy their gas to get there.
Yeah, sure. Rusty Mansell dropped list version 1.0 over at Dogs HQ on Wednesday. And it's already shaping up to be a who's who among multiple cycles. That's the big thing for me is like this is a 26, 27, 28, 29s will be there. It's a loaded group this weekend, Jake. And I think a huge opportunity. This is one of those weekends. And look, I know that there are going to be those people who say, it's all about NIL. That's all anybody cares about anymore. And look, I know that those guys exist. But there's something special about getting into a college atmosphere like this and to be on the sidelines for it. And you and I aren't gonna, I mean, it's not like you and I have had the chance to like sit down in Kirby Smart's office and spend time with him afterward. He didn't want us there, to be quite frank with you. But to be on the field while that's happening and like the vibe and the there's an electricity that is tangible in this. And I do think that that stuff does still matter to kids. I think the guys still think it's really, really cool. And I think it's motivating.
Yeah, I mean, I might could put on my Bruntwear work boots and Kirby would be able to like see me then, because then I would be up above like 5'11".
Sure.
But, you know, his eyes kind of gaze above my head. You know, this, I tell you, the thing that stuck out to me about the visitor list is there may be some commitments that are not going to be there, but it looked like pretty much the whole crowd. It's going to be there from a commitment standpoint.
Yes.
You know? And that's, you know, that's always pretty telling. And, you know, I kind of went through and looked at Rusty's list today. You know, by the way, a minute ago when you were saying, you know, some 27s, some 28s, some 29s are going to be there. You kind of sounded like the president of the United States there.
I felt that too. I caught myself. I caught that.
You kind of sounded like Donnie there. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a really impressive group. Some stud running backs in town. Jay Lamar is going to be there. Gabriel Georges is going to be there. Or Gabriel George. Is it Georges or George?
Georges.
Yeah, Georges is going to be there. Kid out of Canada. The Ohio State and Tennessee, I think, are running in front right there. But George is trying to play some catch up. Some stud tight ends. Some committed elsewhere prospects. Got a JUCO kid. They're out of Mississippi that is committed to Mississippi State. Jared Doty, the offensive tackle that recently decommitted from Georgia State. And before you're like, oh, yeah, they're three-star this, that. Hey, listen, the kid's on fire right now.
Alabama wants him too, just so you're aware.
Yeah, they're there. And
so you got an Alabama commit, a Florida commit, a Miss State commit, an LSU commit, a Texas A&M commit, all among, and that's list 1.0.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I feel like Rusty will probably have an update there at some point too.
Oh, yeah.
So just a massive recruiting weekend. And Rusty said it, Rusty's got such an interesting way of saying things sometimes. It cracks me up. If you've never read a text message from Rusty Mansell, you're missing out. But the thing he told me weeks ago was, when that Georgia Alabama
grown ass man list,
yeah, stuff like that, 100%. Except, you know, 30 words put in 40 different lines.
Dudes everywhere.
Yeah. Man hits the enter button a lot. Haikus, yeah. Rusty sends us, if you could say. But he said a while back. He said, you know, when you start talking about that Georgia Alabama weekend, you're going to know what prospects George is trying to flip. Sure. Because they'll get them there. And obviously Georgia will have the Texas game. It'll have the Ole Miss game as well. So those will all be those type of atmospheres and those types of visitor lists. But this is the first one. This is the first really big one. And Georgia's got some major targets in town, and these always tend to pay off later.
And this is huge. Rusty mentioned this the other night, but I think that it's worth mentioning again. This late kickoff affords you a really unique opportunity to get some guys from really far away. Some guys that may not ever have a chance to see you again, or the chance that, you know, it's very slim to take in a game atmosphere. And a game atmosphere of this magnitude at this time of night, I think it's a huge advantage to have the 7:30 kickoff in an atmosphere like this. You know, I mean, if it was 7:30 and you're playing, I don't know, whoever sucks this year, take your pick, Clemson. You know, maybe people wouldn't show up like they would for this game. But I mean, you know, this one is, you've got a real shot. And like you said, I expect we'll see an update to this list. This will become, it's already a semi-national list. I think it'll be a wide national list.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak on this because Rusty, Dog Talk Live last night, if you're not checking it out, Dog Talk Live every Tuesday night with Rusty Mansell. I got to make an appearance last night, both to talk about the schedule and when Rusty had a frog in his throat and you know, needed me to come in and throw a couple innings in relief. He got choked on something. I don't know what it was. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the schedule release because I understand that there are a lot of scheduling stuff that we don't understand, you know, that we can't really grasp, you know, unless you get into the nitty gritty and you start trying to make the schedule yourself. I just think it sucks that it just couldn't roll right over and be all of the teams for the next 2 years that Georgia didn't play this year. And we're still going to have to wait until 2027 for Georgia to go to College Station. And it's not that I'm clamoring to go to College Station, but I will say this. I didn't really want to have to go to College Station, Austin, Lexington, Kentucky, and Tampa all in the same year. And here we are. The Dogs HQ American Express may need to be on a little bit of a complimentary finance plan at some point.
Yeah. I don't know, man. We just flip this over the next year kind of thing. I don't mind that. I think that that's probably a reasonable way to handle it. Certainly Georgia, and I know that everybody's going to feel that Georgia's getting the shaft on the Alabama deal, you know, in terms of where they, how often they've had to go there versus how often they've come to Athens. Yeah, I was surprised that you wouldn't just go ahead and do the Texas A&M thing. I figured it's nonsensical that it hasn't happened yet. It's ridiculous. People in scheduling should feel embarrassed that Georgia has not played at Texas A&M in 15 years, right?
It will be by the time they play them.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, 15 years. Okay, that's ridiculous. This is one conference, man. You could have worked that in somewhere along the way.
They've only played one time.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean they've been to Athens once. I mean,
and set the game back like 30 years too. God, that was a boring game.
Yeah, you know, I was glad to see the Oklahoma thing happen just because that was one that. Like they had to squelch that right before the
2023. Yeah, that was supposed to happen in 2023. And because the return trip was set for 2031, the SEC, you know, kind of demanded, hey, shut that down. And, you know, because I believe the announcement was made in 2021 that Texas and Oklahoma were joining the league. And then it took a little time, but they eventually, you know, stomp that out and didn't. So Georgia had marquee games canceled for 2023 and 2025, you know, at Oklahoma, at UCLA. Luckily they got to keep the Clemson game. I wonder what's going to happen with those marquee games that are on the schedule with Florida State, with Clemson, with Ohio State, you know, all of those. I wonder
I unfortunately feel like those will go away. I think that you
I hope not. I hope not, but it makes sense for the two to go away, especially with, you know, especially with moving a 9-game conference schedule. But I feel like when Georgia
and Georgia, the thing about it is for Georgia, they have the permanent built-in out-of-conference game.
Yeah.
And so, and I know that that probably doesn't do a lot for everybody, but you just got to wonder, to some degree, Jake, everybody wants exciting matchups. But at some point, you have to practice smart self-preservation and say, what gives me the best opportunity to move through the schedule in a way that is makes it most easy for me to attain the playoff? And so, you know, keeping Ohio State around Florida State, that's stuff's not going to help you.
Nobody.
I will say this too. I didn't for that same sake of argument. I do think it's a little unfortunate that Georgia caught South Carolina as their permanent rival for the 4 years. I think that that's because I think the other one that was ballied about was Kentucky, and I do think that that would have provided you the easier path. South Carolina has. Mm-hmm. South Carolina has played spoiler to Georgia a lot over the years.
They have. It's been a while.
It has.
You know, the thing
I'd rather go to Lexington than Columbia, too.
Yeah, I would, too. The thing about the South Carolina game is, though, there's a rivalry imbalance there because it feels like it means a lot more. It's almost like Georgia Tech right now. Like Georgia sure. Tech, and I'm not saying Georgia will never be South Carolina's Super Bowl. That's Clemson. You know, like that's always going to be Clemson, you know, but Georgia is Georgia Tech's Super Bowl, and it's probably South Carolina's second biggest win that it wants every year, you know, and so that's kind of what you've got to deal with there. But Lenore Sellers goes pro after this year, and it's a big break because programs like South Carolina don't just reload at quarterback very often. You know, if they do, you know, kudos to Shane Beamer. But as we're seeing right now, you know, they can't handle the expectations as it was. You know, that's Jake Rowe don't call one very right very often, but that was one I saw coming from a mile away, was handling those expectations with Lenore Sellers coming back and all the stuff you've got to deal with. It almost felt a little bit like, you know, and it almost felt a little bit like Carson Beck coming back to Georgia with just such, you know, yeah. Like you've got to get to a very, very incredible spot just not to be considered a failure.
I agreed, except that I would say the significant difference there is that Georgia has been to that mountaintop recently.
Right.
Whereas South Carolina, I mean, that was all eyes on you for the first time in a real long time.
Yeah.
And
not only that, but Georgia handled its expectations really poorly to the tune of winning an SEC championship. Sure. You know, so, and South Carolina's been to one ever.
Yeah.
And got pantsed. So, you know, that's, you know, listen, I'll always say this,
I would rather have kept of all of it, and this doesn't make sense based on what I just said. Selfishly, I wish they'd kept Tennessee every year. But
yeah, I do too. I do too. I mean, yeah. I hate seeing that game go away because it's been such a big part and a big rivalry since the SEC East days. But one of my things is, and God, this is disrespectful to South Carolina, but I got to do it. one of South Carolina's last time I checked, they had two banners. They may have three now because they made an SEC championship game since. Made one, by the way. Won an SEC East title. Good for them. One of their banners was Shannon Sharp, all-time leading receiver.
Yeah, I know. I knew where you were going with
this. You know how many programs can hang that banner in their stadium? All of them. Every single one of them can hang an all-time leading receiver banner in their stadium. So I hate to be disrespectful like that because I have come to, you know, we've started making, we go to the beach in North Carolina a lot, you know, as far as vacation goes, and we've made Columbia kind of our halfway stopping point. And, I've come to love Columbia. I mean, I think there's some cool things about that city that weren't there when I first started going, back in the late 90s. You know, Columbia's a little bit of a dump back in the late 90s. It's a lot less of a dump now, maybe still one. Yeah, I mean, I've seen some pretty cool things at that stadium. I've almost suffered heat stroke in that stadium before. If you've been there in September, you have too.
One of the hottest places on earth.
we almost lost some good men in the in a Shell Station parking lot to the Heat one time.
Listen, I'll tell you this. Williams-Brice Stadium is an intimidating stadium to play.
Yeah, they start beating on the back of those bleachers.
I mean, because you there the width of my laptop is about the width of the sideline in terms of, like, you got no room to move, and those people are on top of you. But the stadium's kind of a dump.
Yeah, too. It is.
And so I'm sorry this has turned into like this South Carolina bash fest, but I just don't care. Listen, it made me think of it. You said it's their second game, and you were like, Georgia is kind of mad about it. And it made me think of that Don Draper meme where he's like, I don't think about you at all. Yeah. Like, they're like, we hate you. I don't really think about you. Like,
yeah, I did have some fine chicken leg quarters one time in Columbia, South Carolina.
Let me ask you this before we exit this thing out. How would you rank South Carolina in terms of Georgia rivalries?
Oh, God. For Georgia?
Yes.
I mean,
where would you put them on that list? Who are you putting them behind?
Below.
You're going behind Florida for sure.
Below Florida, below Tennessee, below Auburn.
Georgia Tech.
Below Alabama now. Below Georgia Tech now that Georgia Tech's kind of, you know, kind of landed some serious punches against Georgia the past couple years. That's about it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, the funny thing about Georgia is, and we're running long here, but, you know, people grow up where you grew up. They hate Tennessee. People grow up in middle Georgia, Columbia, over to the west side of the state, they hate Auburn. Or you know, a lot of people down south also hate Auburn as much as they hate Florida. You know, so there's that too. And then, you know, people in East Georgia, you know, you run into a lot of those Augusta folks and you know, Grovetown and Evans County and Martinez, all that stuff. Those folks kind of tend to hate South Carolina, you know. I mean, but, you know, still even those folks will tell you, it's Florida, it's Georgia Tech, it's somebody else.
Right, right.
It's, you know, yeah, South Carolina is not considered a major rival for Georgia. And it's not because they're not good or not because anything like that. But Spurrier livened it up. Just the presence of Steve Spurrier, you know, and his trash talk and all that stuff. And, you know, it severely died down when they, you know, beat the crap out of South Carolina that year. Spurrier retired. I'll never forget his comment.
Grayson Lambert.
I'll never forget his comment in the post game. I don't know what the stat was, but it was like, Georgia went 4 of 5 on third. They only have 5 third downs. That can't be right. So that was one of my best Steve Spurrier lines. They only have 5 third downs in the game. That can't be right. Yeah, coach, they beat you to death on first and second down. Grayson Lambert did and sent you into retirement.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, if you guys are coming to Athens on Saturday, if you live near the Athens area, come hang out with us at Redstone. Dogs HQ will be live from Redstone. Rusty and I will be there 9:30, 9:45. We're going to go live at 10:30 for a 1-hour pregame show to kind of discuss the game. And then Rusty and I are going to hang out for another hour, maybe an hour and a half. And you know, just meet and greet, you know, goof off with you guys. We'll also be at the Hotel Indigo Friday night, the night before the game. You know, if you want to swing by there as well, you know, they've got a happy hour going on. As soon as happy hour is over, Rusty and I are going to – that one will not be broadcast. You got to be there in person for us to talk about the game. Listen, there's probably some stuff going to fly. You know, there's probably some information going to get come off of there. Probably some stories going to be told you've never heard before. So, you know, get a little – we're not technically unplugged, but we will be uncensored. And it'll be a lot of fun. So there's a lot of opportunities to come.
We're trying to get the Rizzler. We don't think he's going to come. We're trying, though. We're trying to get the Rizzler to come. So
yeah, we could get the Rizzler.
Bring the whole show full circle.
Yeah, if the Rizzler's got you on tilt this week, maybe you don't show. You know, but we'd love to see you, man. We really would. I mean, that's the big thing. Redstone does not give us money if you show up. Okay. That's not a part of it. We want to meet you guys. It's very fun for us to get there in person and have conversations where you put names to handles and to YouTube names and you know, the commenters and stuff like that, man. We want to hear from you a lot and have a chance to kind of meet you and thank you so much you know, for what you've done to help us build this channel, to help us build this website. So come see us, get some great food at Redstone, get some incredible merchandise. I'll say this every single time. You will find things at Redstone as far as apparel that you won't find anywhere else. So come see us there. We'd love to see you.
Outstanding. Guys, look, it's all happening. Get ready. Gird your loins. It will be here on Saturday. The Georgia-Alabama matchup coming down the pipe. You can tune back in with us on Saturday, 10:30 a.m. here on the Dogs HQ YouTube channel, and we will be broadcasting live from Redstone. We will talk to you very, very soon.
Gird those loins.